Today we're going to try to take a few minutes to address what we call our top 10 year-end planning. The list is not to be viewed as exhaustive, but as comprehensive as we could put together of things that we think are highlights. If there's anything that you have found to be valuable or you've heard, by all means, shoot it to us as well. We understand that these things are an ever-evolving, comprehensive list, and so we want to make sure that we never miss a piece. So number one on our list today is make gifts to top off the lifetime gift exemption amount. Is this tied to the year-end? Not necessarily, but it always seems to be a time where people take stock of gifts they want to make to loved ones, gifts they want to make to charity, harvesting losses, realizing gains before the taxable year ends. And so while the, as my dad would say, the laws of inertia have this body in motion, it may be an opportune time to top off the exemption. What does that mean, top off? So as you know, many of you, and we did over 100 trusts at the end of 2012 and probably another 50 in 2013 and 14, where people put in over $5 million. And many of you have much more that you can be giving away beyond that. So the exemption has tracked or attempted to track inflation each year. So we are now $180,000 when you're focusing on married couple from the $5,250,000 number at the end of 2013 to $5,000,000 $340,000 number, and then it goes up again next year as well. When you take the two numbers and you add in husband and wife, there is $180,000 of money that you can put away and gift without any tax consequences. If you look at that and think about the compounding over the next 20 years, you know, it could be, you could wind up with close to $500,000 or more that you've gotten off your balance sheet, and just by this simple move saved $500,000 in tax. The second piece is that the more money that's in the trust, the more leverage we have to buy other assets. And so many of you have actually used the assets in the trust as the purchasing vehicle to buy partnership assets or assets in the family out of your estate and into the trust. So the more that's in there, the greater the ratio for lending versus the amount that is equity. So please keep that in mind. Number two is to make gifts to charities and family foundations with appreciated assets. So the whole notion of gifting low basis stock so that you're not selling the asset, paying the gains, taking the cash, and then funding that into the foundation. You're actually making the gift of the appreciated stock. DTCing is the parlance for wiring over the shares into the foundation account. No sale takes place until it's in the charitable entity. You avoid the tax on the sale, but you get the full value of the gift. And as larger gifts are made, for sure, the there are ratios as to how much you can give to your foundation based on your annual income, and we can talk about that. We've talked about it with most of you separately, but the opportunity here is to at least get those assets off your balance sheet. It may also help to minimize the 1 to 2% excise tax on net investment income that you may have as well. Furthermore, you can consider offsetting the gains with losses, as private foundations cannot carry forward the capital losses. So this is more about selling those positions that may have become disproportionately high because they perform well this year. But if you have losses that you, for whatever reason, needed to sell because the position was a dog, it wasn't going to get any better, you can reduce the excise tax on the net gain by selling those positions that are growing. Again, there's no tax other than this excise tax only on the gain. Number two, under two, or B, Determine liquidity needs of the foundation, because you're going to have to make your required 5% payment out. And the opportunity here is to not be forced to sell assets that are continuing to do well and stripping that future appreciation by selling them now. For the first time this year, we were working with a group at one of the big houses in the city, New York, that offered to make loans to foundations whose investment positions are tied up in illiquid assets. And those happen, private equity pieces, or the person who has funded the foundation says these are great opportunities, but then finds themselves in a position where they can't make the annual mandatory charitable gifts unless they sell those illiquid pieces. So here we've dealt with lenders who will actually make a loan to the foundation, and that will create the liquidity to make the 5% distributions out. We think it's a great opportunity, and we look forward to having discussions. You also may consider making a conduit election, so the contributions to the foundation can be treated as though they're made directly to the public charity for income tax purposes, which can be helpful if all donations will be made early in the following year, and the income tax deduction would be limited to more restrictive private foundation rules. But if it's a conduit election tied to a public charity, we can do great work there. Last one under gifts to charities is subparagraph D, and that is fund a charitable remainder trust with concentrated position of appreciated securities in order to diversify without the adverse tax consequences. So there's a whole lot of things that have to come into this. We have to look at the income stream. Do you want it for a fixed period of time? Do you want it for a lifetime? How much are you looking to gain by putting it into the charitable trust? We need to be respectful of New Jersey rules. If you're in New Jersey, with respect to charitable remainder trust, making gifts into a foundation. But when establishing the charitable remainder trust, take the income tax charitable deduction for the present value of the charity's remainder interest. So, of course, we have to look at what, don't forget to take that when you make your gift at the end of the year. When you're making a gift directly to a foundation, provided that you're making the ratios, you get the full deduction, $10, $10 deduction. When you're making a charitable remainder, a gift to a charitable remainder trust, and you're going to get annuity payments back of 50 cents a year for the next 20 years, well, then you're not making a $10 donation. You're making something less than that. So we have to work through the formula. But regardless, whatever that remainder piece is that is considered a charitable gift, gosh darn it, make sure we take it in the year that you create the charitable gift. And this is a very important piece, particularly for our clients who are asking us to help them with their income tax. So number three is harvest losses to offset capital gains and reset the income tax basis for future gains. There is, of course, the one issue, which is the wash rules, where you cannot repurchase in a short period of time. But if you sell the securities to recognize the losses, they can be used, of course, to offset the capital gains that you've already sold. You can also employ the same strategy for debts that are not going to be recoverable. Again, writing that off creates a tax event. Number three, consider selling securities to raise long-term capital gains to lock in a more favorable tax rate this year. We don't know, for certain what will happen with income tax next year, but the notion typically is postpone paying income tax unless you think that rates are going to be higher in the years to come. For sure, what you don't want to do is have the decision made for you. You want to speak with either us or another firm. Again, we're doing significant work in income tax planning for our clients, but just to say which is the better approach here and at least analyze that piece. Number four is to establish and fund qualified plans. So set up retirement plans by year end with contributions deferred until the tax filing due date. Consider making a gift of up to $5,500 to either a traditional or a Roth IRA. for your children and grandchildren who are not funding their own IRAs but have enough earned income to report. If you have, if you are over age 59 and a half, and your rate is low, you may consider taking a taxable distribution from your retirement plan, even if it's not required, or consider a Roth IRA conversion. We have historically focused on postponing the distributions from IRAs because the compounding effect tax-free has historically been far greater. It is a novel and almost renegade approach to say start to take out from your IRAs today at an earlier age, but doing an analysis may prove that it's worthwhile in a small set of circumstances. And, of course, since we deal with the most nuanced sets of facts, that could be a worthwhile consideration to make the withdrawal. We are big fans of converting IRAs to Roth, and not just by doing the analysis to say, will it work out during your lifetime? The analysis is whether or not it will work out for your children so that we're not compelled to make the distributions of the IRAs over your lifetime. With a Roth, as you know, you don't have the 70-and-a-half mandatory distributions at that point. With the Roth, they can remain undistributed, and so there's more money that's compounding over the course of your lifetime and more that you can leave to your kids. They have to withdraw during their lifetime, even if you never were in pay status yourself. Obama has presented some opportunities here where they've said that maybe this dynamic will change, but for the near term, we think it's still worth considering. If you do convert to a Roth in 2014 and it turns out that you're paying the taxes and by late in 2015, we'll call it October 15th, you've realized that that position, we pray won't be the case, but the positions in your IRA have gone down. So you converted a $1 million IRA to a Roth IRA and in 2015 it's worth $750. God help us, another great recession. In those sets of facts, you can recharacterize it back to a non-IRA, non-Roth IRA, and avoid having to pay the tax on that, and then try again. Number five, identify assets and amounts to make proper Graft distributions. So many of you on this call are in the middle of Grafts. Okay, so the gift with the Graft is that you make the transfer into a trust and invest for the benefit of your family or your children or a child or a loved one, and that to the extent that there's growth, all that growth will pass to your loved one. And the goal here is that all of the original money transferred in will be paid back. So on a Grat, we'll say we'll put $1 million into a Grat, and that money will be invested aggressively, and over a five-year period, the Grat will pay back you as the original maker. So you protect your original principal, you'll get a small coupon rate of interest, and to the extent that the portfolio has grown during that five-year period, then all the growth will pass to your children free of tax. It is an area that Obama, again, has gone after, because it seems to only be deployed most effectively for the ultra-wealthy, and his approach, egalitarian approach on taxes, says that if it doesn't benefit everyone, then it shouldn't be used. And in this instance, the Graft, however, he's had no political capital to eliminate the Graft. The most important thing, however, about the Graft, other than choosing great positions and having it do well, and perform well, is that you must make the annuity payment every year. So we're on top of that as your lawyers, but sometimes you have financial advisors who want to make that decision as well. We all want to protect you, because if the payment is not made, we are blowing the structure of the Graft and effectively ruining it. And that would be a shame, particularly if we had $500,000 or $1 million of growth that would be going to your children or loved ones, grandchildren, without any tax, and because we didn't make the annual payment back to you. Number six is oh, by the way, last piece on five is that if there is illiquid positions in the grad, be mindful that we have a distribution date and we have to value the positions in the grad so we can figure out exactly how much your annual annuity payment is back. This is important because if the valuation is deemed incorrect, the grad could be disqualified. So what we have done for you, those of you who have illiquid positions you're putting in grads, we are creating a family limited partnership in one instance, and so we're just gifting back the annuity payment back to you is a fraction of the ownership in the family limited partnership so that we're not forced to sell the illiquid asset to make the annuity payment each year. Number six is to host annual meetings for partnerships, foundations, and family missions. So the IRS is very, very focused that your partnership looks, smells, and feels and acts like a legitimate business, the same with your foundation and family mission. So my view always was, you know, you've got to get on the last train out of town before the rebels come in, and that's why we have done some partnerships and foundations. So we want to do it right and get on this last train, but do it correctly. What we're saying here is a year later, 2 years, or 3 years later, that train is getting stopped further along the track, and in come the rebels looking for papers and confirming that everything is done properly. And that has been more of the MO of the IRS, either when there is someone that passed away that triggers the event to analyze the work, or just they cradle the grave opportunity where they want to see paperwork. They always start gently, but they do want to know that your partnership and your foundation and other work that you're doing, you're having annual meetings, which connotes that you're taking your business seriously and you're organizing it. We've been doing those all month with our clients on foundation work with you guys, discussing the performance of the portfolio, the checks that are being made, the tax expenses that you've had, and the reporting requirements that we have year end. Those family meetings are productive, and they're also necessary for the foundation to work. We want to make annual exclusion gifts to chosen loved ones in the family. So a husband and wife can make $28,000 of gifts. What we like to say is taking acorns out of your front yard and tossing them into your children and grandchildren's yard, putting a fence around it so they don't run over with their tractor or their new Camaro, but assuring that those acorns will one day grow into mighty oaks. Everyone's seen the tree-lined streets throughout the Northeast and even in the country, knowing that they all started with one little seed. So the $28,000 a year should not be missed. Number two is you can make contributions to the 529 plans. In some instances, it's wonderful. In other instances, we've been concerned about the limitations on investments, the lack of a state income tax deduction if it's not in your home state, the limitations on distributions. And so for many of you, we have chosen to create trust for the children and grandchildren rather than the 529s. But nonetheless, they do serve a purpose and a very important one, particularly because they compound free of tax, and so there is a value there as well. More control, keeping the money with your portfolio managers, and choosing the positions if they're inside a trust than if you're limited to the investment plans of the 529. The last piece is that you can make gifts directly to the educational institutions and medical facilities. And they are not limited to the annual gift exclusion amount. So grandparents, you can all make your gifts to your grandchildren's schools. My daughter jokingly referred to this past week that I'm not worried about a high-paying job. Mom and Dad, I'm going to work in public service because I know that you'll pay for our children's private school. Boy, was that statement received with mixed emotions. Yes, we're excited that she's doing great work in the community and to change the world, but also saying, yikes, now we got grandchildren's private school to pay for. You can all do that without grandparents, without paying the any gift tax on that. Okay, number eight, make distributions of income from trust accounts and estate accounts to the lower income tax liability. So as we have developed, and very, very importantly, our sophistication in managing the income tax liability on trusts, we're passing that work off, the benefits of those experiences off to you all. Trust tax rates are among the highest in the nation, matching the highest tax bracket that you have for income earners. If the income is distributed to lower income beneficiaries, then they'll enjoy the tax at their rate. Of course, that can be significant, particularly when you're looking at the 3.8% Medicare surtax that applies to the trust. It does mean you have to make the distribution. So the question is, do you want to do that? And if you do, your lower income bracket beneficiaries will enjoy the better rate than the high rate on the trust. When making the distributions, and this is where a lot of our work has been coming in, is allocating between return on principal versus income when distributions are going out, and it is complex. We're working with some of the most sophisticated institutional trustees in the country who we love, as we're also serving in that trustee position too, to do our best to allocate return on principal, which gives us no tax event, versus income, which of course is the highest tax event. But again, consider making the distributions before year end so that the income tax liability will be at the lower rate. Number nine, review all your life insurance policies and life insurance trusts to confirm compliance. So our sophisticated insurance relationships have for years been warning us that trustees involved in policies that are not being reviewed on an annual basis could have some liability if things go south. And so more and more we are having our clients do an audit of their insurance policies, and we have some extremely sophisticated insurance people right at the front of my mind here that can analyze the coverage, and we give it to them. In fact, they'll take a fee or they'll take no fee, but they'll tell us how the portfolio is performing, where the risks are, what the ratings of the carrier are, what the performance has been from a dividend standpoint, and this is important on two reasons. One, because we want to protect the investment in the coverage, and number two, we want to protect your trustees so to assure that they are doing their job. The same would be by analyzing long-term care and your liability insurance, just to protect the assets you have around your home. Very, very important issue, making sure your liability insurance is great. I just did an audit of one of our properties today, and we're concerned about where there's overlap with other coverage, but also where there are gaps. So key pieces to use this opportunity to analyze your liability insurance. Also consider your long-term care coverage, and certainly your life insurance. We are becoming more and more fans of long-term care coverage as we see people coming in who don't have it, who continue to protest that it was one of the bigger mistakes they've made in their retirement years. Can I tell you that long-term care sweepingly is a great investment? No, but the one rule that we have continued to be heard is, if you go into a nursing home for 1 year, it is likely that the payout on that policy will be more than all of your premiums aggregated. So then, of course, the analysis, that sounds great, then do it, but then the analysis is, how likely will you go in a nursing home and how likely will you live a year? The studies typically say you'll live 1 to 4 years. Of course, many live longer. But certainly meet with your advisors and talk about long-term care coverage. It's a huge issue. Next is we need to make sure that all your beneficiary designations are correct. We have heard, you know, one of our 10-step pieces in our 10-step process is the post-execution asset allocation and beneficiary designation stage or step. And in that, we want to make sure that all of your IRAs, all of your life insurance, are all your bank accounts are all properly designated, the beneficiaries are properly laid out. When you pick up a new account, when someone changes who's your representative, it's uncanny how we see that things are not always perfect. And that's a problem, because if you have named your children and it's not going into trust, or you've named one child thinking that they're going to handle everything for everybody else before you came to us and we told you that's completely wrong, if that hasn't been changed, it is undermining your plan, because those financial instruments override anything we put in your will. So we have to have the two of them sync, and anytime you have a new account, you should be reaching out to us so that we're checking on that piece. Very, very important. We have a step, which is a pre-mortem planning, in those situations when we believe that we're seeing a loved one on to the next life, and we have 60, 30, 90 days to do a complete forensic review of every financial instrument and all the estate planning. That's a gift and a privilege to do that, and it's, in many respects, it's as if you're doing the estate planning, you're front-running the estate planning, or you are leading with it. We would never do it any sooner than that, and we do need to know that, you know, that the situation for the client is extremely grave with little hope of a return. But that analysis is phenomenal. So imagine doing that Chinese fire drill every two or three years since you've done your plan to say, is everything in place? It is the best way to make it easier on your loved ones when you pass away. And as you know, Elizabeth runs the estate administration department for us, and with several people, including accountants, on the team, she is doing these drills and making sure that accounts are properly titled. Please call us or have us speak with your financial advisors. Many of you know with the life insurance trust, you have to give notices to your beneficiaries. So those need to be done once a year. That's the crummy notices, okay, with any gift that you put in. There are certain exceptions when you don't have to put the notices together, when the trustee has actual knowledge of the beneficiary is receiving it and they are in control of them, or they're the guardians. But all in, the conservative approach is to do the crummy notices each year. So we have sent you all, once we've done the trust, a boilerplate that you can use each year. We want you to do that. We're also organizing with you, as part of our relationship, an annual review, so that we're making sure the beneficiaries of any new accounts are retitled. We're making sure that the crummy notices are being done every year. We're making sure that you're making gifts to your loved ones and that the annuity payments are being made out from your grants. But that requires that we meet. So please reach us if we have not reached you about the annual meetings. You also can consider using RMDs, or required minimum distributions, that you do not need or want to take to fund life insurance policy to replace the lost assets. So once you are in pay status on your IRA, when you are taking the money, making the withdrawals, you can use that to fund an asset, particularly life insurance, inside of a trust, off your balance sheet. So the IRA's got, and as you know, we represent many people who have large retirement plans because they're in academia, and so it is one of the single largest assets they have. And maybe they have $1, $2, $3, $4, $5 million of assets and in qualified monies, and so all of that's going to be taxable on their passing away. But if they use the required minimum distributions, or even took an excess amount and use that to purchase a life policy, which would be in trust, that would be off their balance sheet and could serve to offset the tax that will be due either on death because of the IRA or on the minimum withdrawals that are taken out on an annual basis that your children will be doing for the income tax. So we do like life insurance for many, many reasons, but this is just one where we think it's great using the IRA withdrawals. So I'll finish as we hit the witching hour of 1 o'clock. that again, we want to wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy Hanukkah and Happy Kwanzaa, and we want to gently and friendly remind you that we're about to finish a phenomenal year, and we all need to be, we all should consider how lucky we are and what a great year it has been for so many. My dad survived a broken hip with a 50% mortality rate, and he is being released from the hospital with his new hip, strutting like Fred Astaire at 88 years of age, and mom is waiting at home for him. So there are many of those. I hope we all get this chance to be appreciative, and I want to finish by saying let's celebrate that together in the new year. So January starts a whole new year. We erase everything off the chalkboard, and we start fresh with our new goals. And one of them should be that we meet. We sat with a client earlier this year, and he said, I want to meet with you every year. And his comment was, I spend more time every month figuring out where our next vacation is going to be or where we're going to have dinner on Saturday night. There's absolutely no reason why I shouldn't spend an hour reviewing with you all my estate plan. And we think that was capital advice. And so we are now encouraging you guys to do that as well. And we'll reach out to you. But surprise us. Reach us first. Tell us you want to meet, and we'll go through all the things on the list. Have a wonderful rest of the day. Enjoy the big snowflakes that are coming down today, and we will speak to you in the new year. All the best now. Bye-bye.